next and last stop is
Atlantic Avenue, Barclays Center.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Boomer and Geo on the Fan. A lot of Nets podcasts.
I mean, the only Net fans you know? The only what? The only Nets fans you know?
At least they've got some self-aware.
Man. I mean, come on, man. Or are these guys?
Welcome back to the Only Net Fans You Know podcast. I'm Peter. Today we got a special guest. Charlie is out. Our guest today is a member of Nets Twitter. He's a credentialed member of the press. You can catch him over at Swish Theory or Nets Daily. Welcome to the show, future New York Sports Writer of the Year, Lucas Kaplan.
Appreciate the intro, my man. Excited to be here. Excited to talk free agency and Nets hoops with, I guess, the only Net fan you know today. But been doing great work on the podcast, on Twitter, so I'm excited to be here.
All right, guys. You can catch him at?
At Lucas Kaplan _.
Gotcha. That's perfect. All right. We're going to jump straight into it. NBA offseason, free agency, state of the Nets, brand new CBA. Every team seems to be adjusting to it in different ways. We have teams like Phoenix just going all in. You see other teams trying to get off contracts like Atlanta. I noticed that you're one of the few people that is actually taking time to read the CBA and finding these little loopholes and these little things that are going to penalize teams going forward. Well, what's your thoughts on the first couple days?
Yeah, I think, I think we won't really see the true ramifications of it until maybe a year or two down the line. I mean, if you remember summer 2016, when the cap expanded with the new TV deal, that was the summer where we saw all these huge deals, like Timofey Mozgov got paid, I think, some ridiculous number, $20 million a year. And we didn't really understand kind of what that meant for the future of the league until a few years into those contracts. I think the big thing to me that stood out is the severe penalties, second apron, first apron even, more severe than they've been in the past. So I think these penalties, while teams are adjusting to it now, like you mentioned, we're not going to get the full scope of it for, I think, a few seasons. With the Nets, you know, I think the repeater tax penalties increased, and I think it makes sense for them this offseason to get under that tax and reset it. And I'm sure we're going to talk about that a lot today, but that's what I've noticed with them so far.
Yeah, we saw the Bradley Beal deal happen. I believe a deal like that would have not been able to happen if you waited past July 1st. They make the deal before July 1st. It's under the old CBA, but still the cap hits are going to follow. Like, I believe I saw, what was it? I think their draft picks could be, like, deducted or dropped or something like that with the second apron. And they have to be at a certain, at that tax, that second tax level, 2 out of 4 years, if I'm correct.
I think it's 3 out of 4 years, but yeah, essentially, yeah. It's pretty wild. Their first round pick, if they don't, well, A, they can't trade it. They can't trade their furthest out first round pick because of they're now a second apron team. And to be able to get that pick to be traded, they have to be under that second apron in 3 of the next 4 years. Or it automatically goes to the back of the first round when that draft comes. So, you know, if teams are looking far out at the Phoenix Suns and they say that 2032 or whatever it is pick is the most valuable asset, all of a sudden that has like a ton of restrictions on it, and it's not a simple give me that first round pick. So already we're seeing those sort of little loopholes, like you said, affect what teams can do.
Yeah, and I saw from you that you made a very good point about the first tax apron, that you can't get any buyout players if you're above the first apron, I believe, right?
No, you can't. And I did not know that until Mike Vorkunov of The Athletic released an article, but that was not a super widely reported feature of the new CBA. And I'm, you know, scrolling through it and reading it, and I'm thinking, you know, how much those buyout players impact title contention, who knows? But Kevin Love wasn't a throwaway on the Miami Heat this year. Like, there were some stretches of series and games where they were really happy to have him. And under the new CBA, that would not have been an option. And, you know, every year in February, March, we get to the buyout market and teams sign guys. I mean, hey, Nets fans, you know, should know that better than anybody from the last few years. So, like, another wrinkle in there.
Yeah, just to give an example, I hate to use this team because we've talked about this team a lot on the podcast and my other shows, but a team like Phoenix, I don't think people realize how restricted they're going to be, as in just adding players. They can only add players via the draft, of the draft picks that they still luckily have, via the vets minimum.
Yep.
And any trade that they make is going to be, I think they close the margin of the money between the two players that are getting traded by a lot, right? It's something like that. It's complicated, but I don't think people get the full effect of this.
Yeah, they did. And I think that's a reason they had maybe some trouble offloading DeAndre Ayton, who, as much as people like to punch down on DeAndre Ayton, like, has had some really near all-star level impact for like months at a time as a young NBA player. And I think maybe part of the reason that teams around the league weren't super interested in adding him via trade was the matching salaries, like you said, under the new CBA, and how that new contract would play out. So the Suns are probably going to be the poster child for building a super expensive team now with the new CBA.
Yeah, well, we saw the Nets make their first move after felt like forever that they were not doing anything. We saw Joe Harris shipped to Detroit. We wound up having to give up our second round pick in 27 via the Mavs and 29 via the Bucks. And the Nets wound up getting a 19.9 trade exception. We all know why that move was made. I've been saying this over and over and over. If we're going to sign CJ, if we're going to bring him back, and people worried about the cap, why not just trade Joe Harris? And that was the move that was made.
Yep. I mean, pretty straightforward, like you said. The longest tenured net, 7 seasons, and a pretty unceremonious goodbye, as I wrote in an article that I published today on Joe's sort of farewell to Brooklyn. But tax purposes, 2 second-round picks that the Nets don't own. 2027 is Dallas. 2029 is Milwaukee's. Maybe a bit of a handshake agreement here. The Nets doing Detroit a favor, and in exchange for Detroit not pursuing Cam Johnson super hard. You know, they were the team that was rumored to throw a wild offer sheet at him during restricted free agency. All of a sudden, their cap space is eaten by Joe Harris. It's not used. So a pretty straightforward deal. Interesting that it's to the Pistons. But like you said, the reasons for this are very obvious. And $20 million expiring dollars for a team that's trying to get under the tax, that's not near championship contention. This the signs, the writing was on the wall, I should say.
Nets kind of don't have all the draft picks that people think that we have. If you look at their draft picks coming up, we only have, I think, like 3 or 4 picks in the next 3 years. It's only till, I think, 27 that the draft picks start coming in. I might be 26 or 27 or something like that. But do you think that they gave him a little bit too much?
I think it's worth it to get off the deal. I mean, we knew they were going to get under the tax, I should say. And $20 million is much more expensive than either Dorian Finney-Smith or Royce O'Neal even put together. I think they come close to Joe Harris's contract, and they've been rumored as pieces the Nets could offload. And you are right about the point about the picks. You know, we've heard a lot from the Nets organization about, you know, we have a lot of picks in the future and we're excited to build this way. That really doesn't come true until 2027, as you said. They do have a swap with Houston in 2025 in the first round and 2027. But I wouldn't mind the 2 second round picks, just because if you look at 2027 to 2029, they have, I think, five or six left in those years, even when you take out the ones that they just gave up. And, you know, I think they'll be okay giving up other teams' picks. But second rounders, you know, we saw it last year in the DeAndre Jordan salary dump where they gave up four, are often easy to get back. You know, they circulate throughout the league, certainly passed around a good bit. But if that's the cost of doing business, and if they can get picks back like they think they can for Royce or Dorian Finney-Smith, I don't super mind it.
That's a good point. Now going to the trade exception. The Nets got a huge trade exception as part of the KD deal. It's around 18 million. This is around 19 million, almost 20. It's 19.9 if you're doing the math. Man, I don't know if that's going to be something that we look forward to right now, but the fact that it can be carried for a whole year, I kind of like the trade exception. I'm a big fan of trade exceptions. People always kind of look down on them. But for a team like the Nets that are going to probably be over the cap, that's a nice weapon that you can use. If you're going to contend, you bring somebody in using that maybe. If you want to get draft picks back to eat a bad contract, you could use that too. The KD one ends in February. This one we'll call this 19.9 million. We'll go into July of next year. I kind of expect the 19.9 maybe to bring someone in. Maybe next year. We'll see what happens. But, man, do you think they could use the KD's 18 trade exception or no?
I wouldn't anticipate KD's being used just because, like you said, it runs through February and you never know what's going to happen at the deadline. But I don't anticipate them adding, you know, a salary that could fit in that. I haven't heard a lot personally about the trade exceptions being used. Obviously, this is before Joe Harris, which happened, you know, 2 days ago. I think if you're looking down the line at trade exceptions, you know, I think these are all things you file away and you come back to later. Like if the Harris one gets used, it's not going to be for a little bit. But 12 months is a long time in the NBA. You know, Nets fans obviously know that better than anybody. This is the one that I would maybe look to in a while, towards the end of next season, you know, starting in the offseason. Ben Simmons, I'm going to say this a lot during this podcast, becomes an expiring then. You never know where the Nets are a year from now, who asks out around the league, whatever. So I would keep this Harris TP, put it in the back pocket, see where it is in a while from now. But KD's, if I had to guess, I would say I wouldn't have super high hopes for that trade exception being used. This year as a whole is probably a holding pattern sort of year, not too many major changes. I think this front office wants to see what they have before they add a lot of salary or a big time player.
I gotcha. So we talked about the corresponding move. The Nets wind up re-signing Cam Johnson, 4 years, $108 million. This is a topic I really want to dive into because a lot of people are either really happy or really, really upset by this. I saw someone call Cam Johnson a glorified role player. I've seen him called trash. I've seen this. I've seen that. What's your thought?
My thought is that one thing to remember, the NBA is getting nearly $3 billion a year. I promise this has a point. From Disney and Warner Bros. As a part of the current TV deal. That deal ends after the 2025 season, which is 2 out of 4 years into Cam Johnson's contract. At that point, you know, preliminarily, people are anticipating the cap to go up by 8-10%. And this Cam Johnson deal, which already isn't as maybe, you know, fat as some people might think. I think with excluding maybe unlikely incentives, it's going to be around $25 million, maybe even less a year. I don't think it's really an overpay. The poll I put out on my Twitter as a very comparable player and price range, Kyle Kuzma got 4 years, $102 million. And Nets fans who voted on the poll pretty overwhelmingly said they would rather have Cam Johnson straight up on their team. So if you believe that, if you believe he has some room for internal improvement, even at 27 years old, which Nets fans believe Mikhail did at the same age, then I don't see a huge reason to really be upset about it. And the point I make about the TV deal is when the Nets are getting ready to get into that next iteration of contender a year down the line, 2 years down the line, and the salary cap spikes, this contract, A, isn't going to look too bad, and B, it's a very tradable number in a hunt for a star. So I would not say Cam is locked in, like it's going to be an albatross in a few years. This is like setting the roster with Cam and Mikhail no matter what. This is a value move that we saw coming, and I don't really mind this number at all, to be honest.
Are you really going to trade KD and then not keep the second best player in the deal? Are you really just going to let him walk for nothing? I don't know. I don't understand it. I think Net fans are a little hopped up from the last couple of years and maybe a little bit spoiled, but that's my opinion personally.
Yeah, it happens. I mean, so you're happy with the deal then? You think that was pretty, you saw it coming, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. They had to. They absolutely had to. I thought the number was a little bit higher than I thought, but I was expecting 102 to 105. So 108 is really, you know, what was the difference?
Right. Right. Like $1.5 million a year. And Mike Scotto reported the 108 figure is incentives. And we don't know the specifics yet, but a lot of these incentives, I'm sure, are like maybe not the most likely things, like all-star teams, all-NBA teams, stuff like that. So I think the true number is going to be closer to what you're thinking.
I think that's about it on Cam. I do think that he takes a leap this year.
Mm-hmm.
I really hope he does. As far as this team is going, the way that it looks like it's going to be, he's going to be the second option. We saw a little bit in the Philadelphia series what he could do. Do you think there's a jump in him?
You know, I'll say this about Cam. I was a little wary of how much he could improve on the ball just because he's really not a great athlete by NBA standards in terms of wiggle or shake. You know, every time he kind of drives to the basket is off of a closeout that flies by him. But in the Philadelphia series, when everybody was absolutely petrified of attacking the rim and meeting Joel Embiid there, Cam Johnson was the only one that wasn't. And he got to the rim. He took extra dribbles. He lowered his shoulder. He challenged Embiid at the rim. And if he can just tap into that a little bit more, I think he really showed me a lot in that series, just willing to drive through contact. I would like to see that. I think you'll see a little bit more comfort from him. I think you'll see a little bit more of him coming off of handoffs, that sort of thing, getting to his right hand downhill and making some decisions off that. I don't think you're just going to see him stand in the corners and shoot. I wouldn't say a huge leap. I wouldn't say like he gets up to near all-star level, but I would say he's going to be a more valuable offensive player than maybe we've seen in the past.
Yeah, and a lot of people kind of shit on the guy, even though he was on Phoenix for his whole career. Comes onto the Nets, new teammates, new system. There has to be some time to gel. This time he'll have a training camp with the team, a lot more understanding of, you know, who's around you. And it won't be, I called it like a kind of a pickup game when it came to the trade deadline last year and all these, you know, superstar trades that set up the lineup how it is now. You'll have a little bit more comfort, I guess. Either way, yeah. I do have to ask you this, though. People are kind of torn on this. Can he play power forward? I happen to think he can't.
Well, let's say you're playing him next to like a real center, like Claxton or Sharp, you know, for this exercise. Like, can we assume that?
Sure.
Then I would say who's the next biggest guy on the court after him? If it's Finney Smith, then Finney Smith probably guards a four. But if it's like, I mean, if Derek Whitehead is healthy enough and he gets NBA minutes this year, then that's a little thin. I think you can probably get away with it versus certain lineups for a little bit when you really need to juice the offense. The point of attack defense obviously needs to be good. Like, I don't think you could do this with Dinwiddie and Cam Thomas on the floor. So to answer your question, like, you kind of hear me going through it. I would say it's almost a no, but it's very conditionally. Like, I know we'll get into these guys, but if you maybe have Dennis Smith Jr. and Lonnie out there and Mikhail and Claxton, if you want to consider Cam the power forward there, then I think it could work. But I don't think the Nets want to see much of that. So I agree with you there.
Yeah. What scares me is the rebounding. It really scares me is the rebounding, right? I think in the ideal lineup, I'd like to see Bridges at the guard and, you know, having Cam at a small forward. I think that's the ideal situation. And like you said, I do think he could sneak in there. Of course, there's times you're going to want to play small ball. Yes, I'm not saying he can't. I should correct myself. I don't think he can't do it. Of course, he can do it. But it's not ideal for me.
I agree. I mean, we talked a lot about the Nets length last year after the trade deadline. And, oh, this long, switchy group. They're not thick. You know what I mean? They're not big. Like, they get punished on the glass a lot with that group, especially because they don't drop Claxton a ton, which is good. They switch him out a lot where he's really effective. But even when they do drop him, Claxton is not this big body center that, even though I think he's amazing defensively, he doesn't rebound like the Brook Lopez or whoever, whatever big anchor you want to put in that group. So they're already not a great rebounding team. And then when you have thin wings like him and Mikhail, who, even though they're long, yeah, I agree, they're going to get pushed around on the glass. I think that's a big concern for this team. I'm with you there.
All right. Look, I'm going to jump into the next move. We saw Patty getting traded. A lot of people were very happy about that. The Nets get out of his $6.8 million deal. Looked like he was going to go to Houston as part of the Dylan Brooks sign and trade. Now we know that he's going to go to OKC. I don't think we're going to get anything back. That deal is still to be determined to see, you know, all the stuff being finalized. But what's your thought?
Well, I think for the people that I know are not fans of paying Patty that much money and are maybe a little wary of the culture talk, it shows that the Nets front office isn't going to sacrifice what they think is a good basketball move or a good cap move just for a guy that they like to have in the building. So I think if you were in the camp that did not want to see Patty play and did not want to pay him this money, you should be a little bit relieved that the Nets aren't going to hang on to these culture guys that don't provide purely basketball value. You know, it clears up. I'm much more excited to see Lonnie Walker play. I know we'll get to him. I'm much more excited to see Dennis Smith Jr., Derek Whitehead. At this point, who knows what his future with the organization is, but I much rather see Cam Thomas out there. At worst case scenario, you juice up his trade value a little bit and get off of him, but you can't juice the value up if he's on the bench behind Patty Mills. So really clear intention of, yeah, we want to get under the tax. He just had a public speaking event at a public school in Sunset Park where the Nets practice, like literally 2 weeks ago. So it goes to show you that, yeah, a great culture guy, we're not going to sit on our hands and not make a move that we feel is best just because he's a great guy to have around.
Do you think he was brought back partially? Of course, he was good the first year he was in Brooklyn. A lot of people forget that he was very good keeping the team afloat at one point. But I happen to think that he was brought back partially because of Ben Simmons. Am I wrong there?
I don't think you're wrong there. I think that was partly a reason. I think the Nets org expected some things from Simmons this year and wanted to ease him in. And having Patty there was a big plus. If you remember, you know, I always go back to this. There was that stretch in November before he re-injured or tweaked his knee where Simmons was looking like a real NBA player. Like, I'm not saying all-star level, don't get me wrong, but he was averaging like 15, 6, and 6 for like 2 weeks, and he wasn't a traffic cone on defense. So theoretically, I know you never know. Maybe he plays worse even if he doesn't get hurt. But I think that was part of the reason. I think they expected more from Ben Simmons than they got last year. And if Patty was a part of it, I wouldn't be surprised. I don't really know if it was ever Patty versus Bruce Brown, as it was kind of, you know, theorized on Nets Twitter. I don't think it was really apples to apples, but I think it was certainly part of it. And I also think that they made that deal with the knowledge that it's a very tradable number that they signed him to. And I don't think this was the trade they were expecting. I think maybe they were anticipating flipping him, you know, at the deadline last year for like a forward if the Nets were going to contend, but then that clearly didn't happen. But part of that number and part of that re-signing was, you know, this is a tradable contract. But I don't think the Ben Simmons thing is super far off.
I got you. So let's jump into the free agent signings. The Nets signed Dennis Smith Jr. I believe it's a vets minimum deal for $2.3 million. He's 25 years old, 6'2", weighs 205, played 54 games, 25 minutes per game for the Hornets last year, 8 points, 41% from the field, 31% from three, 3 rebounds, 4 assists, and a steal a game. Point guard, ball handler, defender, much needed. What's your take?
I like it. I think it's the type of signing that he should make. I mean, A, I do like that they're improving the point of attack defense. B, if you're going to get a guard that can either shoot, which he really can't do a ton of, or get into the lane and is a good athlete, which he is, I think they need some of that. So I don't mind it. He's active on Twitter, which is fun for Nets fans. And, you know, this could be a high upside, not super high upside, but he could show more on a Brooklyn team that I think is going to be catered to his strengths in bench units. I think if he comes in the game with Dayron Sharpe, you know, they can drop Dayron Sharpe and they can put Dennis Smith Jr. on the best opposing guard and really have him fight like hell to get over screens and just make that guy's life miserable. And Dayron Sharpe has an easier job back in the paint. You know, I think they'll surround him with shooting. He can get into the lane and make reads. I like it. You know, you're not going to do too much better for a veteran minimum. And I'm sure that he was promised some amount of playing time. So I would not be surprised to see him a good amount next year.
Yeah, the shooting really bothers me. Absolutely. I always go through kind of the shooting chart whenever the Nets add a player, and especially from three, the numbers are really, really bad. I can't get over it. Above the break three, 17 of 83, 20%. Just atrocious. Mid-range shot, like you said, he can't shoot, right? On jump shots, 66 of 249, 26%. Mid-range shots, 21 of 76, 27%. So it's safe to say that you're 100% correct that he should be surrounded by shooters. He needs to be surrounded by shooters. But like I said, love the defense. He's going to pass the ball. Do you think this signing was influenced at all by Jay Hernandez being added to the staff?
I actually hadn't thought of that angle before. I'm sure that they got some good feedback from Hernandez. For those who don't know, Jay Hernandez was hired from Charlotte this offseason in a pretty big rehaul overall of the assistant coaches that are now being brought to Brooklyn after last year. But he was big. I know he's a player development guy in Charlotte, and Hernandez was with Jacques Vaughn in Orlando before that. But I am, you know, I think we can say that they asked Hernandez about Dennis Smith Jr. and he probably had some good things to say. Maybe the player coach relationship there is pretty solid. I think that's a good question.
I don't know how much shooting he's going to get done, but I definitely do like the signing. There's been too many times last year that we had Dinwiddie as the pretty much, I think, only trusted ball handler on the team. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I don't know. Good signing in my book. But it was reported that he was their first priority in free agency. Have you heard anything about that? Is that, you know, like, what's up with that?
I wouldn't read too much into that. I think that was Shams who said that.
Yep.
Yeah, priority in free agency. I think that is probably some lip service to Dennis Smith Jr., to whoever gave him the information. But I also wouldn't be, you know, surprised if he was their first priority, in a sense of them getting out their big chalkboard and saying, hey, we want ball handling, we want some point of attack defense, we want to get under the tax, and we think this guy fills some of those needs for the minimum. Let's make a call to him, tell him he's going to get on the court, and we think we can get him. So maybe, you know, the wording first priority is probably pretty strong, because I mean, that's not true. Their first priority was Cam Johnson, but he wasn't an unrestricted free agent. So, you know, I wouldn't read too much into that, but I do believe that the Nets probably had Smith Jr. like circled and ready to go before this, before July 1st or June 30th, whatever it was.
Yep. Next, they signed Lonnie Walker. He's a wing, 24 years old, 6'4", 204. Played 56 games last year, 23 minutes per game. I believe it was with the Lakers. 11 points per game, 44% shooting from the field, 36% from three. Good three-point shooter. Questionable, though. A lot of wings on the team. And I have to think he came here for playing time. I believe, I don't want to misquote somebody, but I believe it was said that he was going to get more playing time in Brooklyn, so he picked Brooklyn over the Lakers. Where's he going to play?
I wouldn't be surprised by that, just with the Lakers re-signing all their guards besides Schroeder and adding Gabe Vincent. He'll come off the bench. I think you can play him next to more wings. I think you can play him at the two. I think he adds, like I said, all of a sudden, the Nets have an athletic team. After a guard wing rotation of Patty and Seth and Joe Harris off the bench, you got Dennis Smith Jr., Lonnie, and hopefully my guy, Edmund Sumner, who I hope they don't forget about in all this, especially in a contract year for him. But I think you'll see him come off the bench if that shot persists. You know, he's a career 35% shooter on the nose after like 1,000 attempts, but he shot 36.5% last year. So we'll see what that number stabilizes at. But I think you'll see him off the bench next to Dinwiddie, next to Dennis Smith Jr. I don't think the point guard position kind of affects where he plays. I'm curious to see, honestly, again, the defense. I'm curious to see if this is a move that the Nets want to make to have a trickle-down effect on the glass, like you talked about. Marks and Vaughn talked about it at the exit interview. They want to get better on the glass. I think part of that might be playing more drop defense, less switching, and to get these athletic guards that they think can get over screens and keep the defensive structure intact. That could be part of that too. I think you'll see him in a lot of different type of lineups, especially early in the season as they figure out who has chemistry with who.
And we're seeing a trend of getting younger, taking chances on guys that are more athletic. Do you think that's going to be something that continues, or is there going to be a rabbit pulled out of the hat at some point?
The Nets have their eyes on the rabbit. I don't think they know what or who it is, and I think it's down the line. But I think until then, these are maybe the types of signings we'll see. Nets thinking that players have untapped upside makes a lot of sense. You know, thinking back 8 years ago, this is what they did before they landed KD Kyrie. I mean, Joe Harris, untapped upside, but he was already in the league a couple years. Same with Dinwiddie. Same with D'Angelo Russell, honestly. So I think you try to get guys, and I know it's not the same situation, but I think you try to get guys that can either be around as value pieces for the next iteration of this team, or you get to a deadline. You get a contender that really needs a backup guard off the bench. all of a sudden Dennis Smith Jr. has all of these minutes on tape this year and he looks pretty good in a lot of them. You flip that for another first down the line and that looks pretty good. So I think it's that. And the third thing I'll say, I think they just want dogs to come in and compete for minutes. I think the Nets really like that sort of mentality. They want guys that want to come in and fight for spots. So I think that's why you see them getting a little younger, a little hungrier, and not as many maybe older vets.
Yeah, I posted a tweet while I was kind of a little bit in my feelings about not seeing the Nets make a move that the Nets aren't going to compete next year, right? I said winning is not in the game plan for this upcoming season. And Pod Thorn, as many people know, valued member of the Nets Twitter community, corrected me and said, it's about a process. It's growing each year. And he's right. And you're right. It's about adding role players in, seeing who's going to be there later, like the Nets did pre-KD. It's the process. There's a lot of similarities. And I don't think you're wrong with that whatsoever.
Listen, I was very vocal. I thought they should have explored what they could have done to get Scoot Henderson. Selfishly, I wanted Dame on the roster after I realized that wasn't a possibility, just to like have an exciting team to cover and a cool offense and whatever. But I think it's understandable that they're not going to throw the mother load at Portland to try to get Dame. Sounds like Dame would rather go to Miami anyway. And what's in the past is in the past. Scoot's in the past. Rebuilding's in the past. That's fine. If you're going to be here, which they've already decided that they're going to, you might as well do it right. Like, we can talk about the past all you want, and I wrote a lot about what I thought they should have done. But now that we're here, you know, we're here, and the only thing that they can do is commit. At least they're not half-assing it. You don't want them to half-ass it and have their eye on one thing and then one eye on another, and maybe a star asks out, blah, blah, blah. You want them to commit to something, at the very least. Because people have their problems with front office, and I'm not going to come on here as a credentialed reporter and shill for them and make all these excuses, but they committed to building from nothing with D'Lo, Harris, whatever, Dinwiddie. That worked out. They committed to spending in free agency, and for all the problems the Big Three era had, they were the best team in the league, and two of their three guys got hurt. And that all fell apart, and you can blame them if you want to, and they're certainly not devoid of blame, but now it's time for a third project to commit to. So as long as they commit to it, and like you said, we're here now, we're going to do it the right way, then I think we just kind of have to see what happens. And it's going to be patient. Like, I know that kind of sucks to hear as an NBA fan of a team. Like, it's not the most fun thing in the world, but it's going to require patience, at least for this year.
Are you concerned with the scoring or lack of scoring that this lineup might have come opening day?
Yeah, that's my big thing with the team. Like, honestly, that concern, I was like, oh, maybe they should trade for Hero. Maybe I would like to see him, and maybe we'll talk about that. And I'm kind of mixed on that. But, yeah, they can't have another year like the post-deadline year last year where Dinwiddie's like the only ball handler and they never get into the paint. And they never take shots at the rim. So that's my big concern with this team. Just like, how often are guys going to get in the paint?
And since you mentioned it, let's bring it up. How do you feel about a possible Tyler Hero deal?
I'm pretty mixed. I'm not going to say I'm too enthusiastic. Like, I don't know how real the noise is. The Nets front office, at least to me, has been like pretty mum, like not super, you know, revealing. But I don't think the noise is coming from nowhere. Like, I don't think it's just coming out of nowhere. But I don't think, again, I don't think they're like head over heels desperately trying to get Tyler Hero either. I wouldn't mind it. You know, people are going to talk about the contract. It's another 4 years. It's pretty identical to Cam Johnson's, honestly. But like I said, that's going to be a tradable contract down the line. I mean, look at Miami. Look what they're doing right now. They're trying to get a star, and that's the main contract that they're using to try to get to it. So if they can do it, like, why couldn't the Nets do it in a little while? I'm not a huge fan of it just because he's like more of a, I'm going to get to my shot and I'm going to get to a mid-range pull-up if I have to, or a floater. And if the Nets were to take that swing, I would prefer like a guy that gets in the paint and kicks it out. Like, they've been comped a lot. I would prefer Poole, just because I know Poole's up and downs, but I know he's going to try to get to the fucking paint and kick it around. And I think that's what the Nets need. So Tyler Hero, yeah, he'd make the offense better. Don't get me wrong. They need some like pull-up shooting. They need a guy that can get a bucket. I'm pretty meh on it. You know, what do you think about him?
I would absolutely be disappointed and hate it if a deal came through. I do understand the thinking. He's still young, right? Contract, right. Like you said, it won't be horrible in a year or two. We're going to be seeing these other max deals kick in. And, you know, people are going to be surprised for sure. And a deal like this will look okay when the dust is settled. So you're going to make Mikal go to small forward then? And then CJ has to be the four? Or he comes off the bench? So it's like, are we looking at CJ and Bridges? Or are we going to trade that just for Tyler Hero? And not, I don't mean trade as in player for player. I mean, like, taking a look at and giving the major minutes to. Not a fan of his game, to be honest. The Nets could use the offense. I really would like the Nets to get a point guard. That's why I think Dame was so, a good basketball fit, you could say. I'm a huge Spencer Dinwiddie fan. My family has met him. He was nothing but a gentleman to my family, so I got nothing bad to say about him. Maybe I'm a little bit too much of a homer. But what I can say to keep my bias out of it is that I don't think he is a good fit with this starting lineup. I would love to see him coming off the bench. I think he would be perfect off the bench for us. I think we need another point guard, someone that could make his own shot, score, but still dish it. But, I don't know who that is or where that's going to come from.
Right. I mean, Dinwiddie had his problems last year, and I wrote about them in the playoffs. But the one thing I always said, I don't think it was really on him. Like, he was overtaxed. I mean, he's in Dallas. He's playing off the ball mostly when he's with Luka. Sometimes he's, you know, handling the ball when Luka sits for like 5 minutes a game. But all of a sudden he's traded to Brooklyn and he's like pretty much the only guy that can like handle the ball legit and set up the offense. Like, you're just asking so much of him. And regardless of Dinwiddie's skill set, fit, bench, whatever, they just like need more guys that can handle the ball. And I like Mikal. He's getting better. He's going to get better. He's not going to be like a primary initiator. And that's fine because he's still like really good and he can run some pick and rolls, but it's still so much for Dinwiddie to handle. So that was kind of my feeling on the Dame thing as well. It's like, yeah, I get you're capping the team at not a super high ceiling and who knows what that contract looks like down the line. But like, selfishly, going to watch these games, it's like, damn, it's just going to be a way better experience having more ball handling and like an explosive guy at that. And a fraction of that is where I'm at with Hero. Like, all the reasons you said, I get it. And like, I'm mixed on it, like you said. I'm not like super pro Hero, but at the very least, it would make the offense a little bit more palatable. I'm just scared that it's going to be such a sluggish offense next year. But maybe not, you know. We still got ways to go in the offseason.
I think they have to add at least one more scorer. I've talked about this with Mikal. I feel like he's a 1B. I don't know if that makes sense to people. That I don't think he, as of right now, that he could be like the main guy, like putting up the points. We know he could put up 40 points. We know he could put up 30 points. He's had these great games. Very exciting. Great. I love it. But I don't know. That Philadelphia series, we saw like Cam come up and almost kind of surpass him at times. And that kind of gives me a little bit of worry if Dinwiddie is going to be your point guard.
Right. The whole thing last year is Mikal put up these good numbers. The offense was entirely dependent on Dinwiddie. You know, Mikal bench, like when Dinwiddie went to the bench, Mikal units could not score the ball. When Mikal went to the bench, Dinwiddie units did much better than just Mikal on the court. Obviously, the offense was best with both of them on the court, but the drop off when Dinwiddie went to the bench was much steeper. Mikhail is like taking on so much responsibility. You know, all of a sudden he goes from shooting corner threes to taking one dribble pull-ups. And now all of a sudden he's like coming off pick and rolls and reading the defense and making pull-ups and trying to get to the rim. It's like you can only ask him to do so much in such a short time. He's not going to go from like, yeah, okay, he can come off a pick and roll and take a pull-up and punish drop defense and maybe get to the rim and maybe hit the roller. It's like you can't ask him to come off a pick and roll and read the weak side and make like manipulate the defense and get the ball moving like every possession. It's just not going to happen. And I like Mikhail. You know, I'm not dissing his game. Like, he's a 6'7" wing. We shouldn't randomly expect him to become like an initiator. I mean, Jaylen Brown's had a lot more responsibility than him for like, what, 7 seasons now? And it's not really happening for him either. So not a Mikhail Bridges diss, but I agree with what you're saying. Like, they need to insulate him more or the offense as a whole is going to suffer.
Anything else you want to bring up? I think you did great job on this episode. We talked about a lot of topics, a lot of free agency still left. So hopefully nothing happens before this drops, but man, thanks for coming on, bro. Give them your plugs or any last topic you want to throw at us. Go for it.
I'll just say this. I think Nets fans could make an effort next year to watch some Long Island games when Clowney and or Whitehead get back. I know people are going to want to see them. I think they're going to get some Long Island minutes, which is good. Like, you want them to get reps. Like, I'd rather have them play 30 minutes a night in the G League than 5 or 8 randomly in the NBA. One thing I'll say, I have a hunch about this, and I've kind of heard this maybe repeated in the organization. Jalen Wilson might be the first rookie that you see get real minutes, just because I think they really want to work on Clowney's body and his technique and all that because he's 18. Wilson does not have the upside Clowney has, but like, he's a 4-year Kansas vet, knows what he's doing. I think the coaching staff is going to trust him. And I think especially if you see Finney Smith or Royce O'Neal get traded or both, Wilson's going to be the first rookie you see. But other than that, I don't have much to say other than thank you for having me on. And I do think this was a great episode. And you can find me all on Twitter, LucasKaplan_. I'm still working on the blue sky, creating an account in case Twitter goes under. But that, and or you can just type in netsdaily.com. All my work's there other than Twitter threads. So thank you for having me on. And, you know, I love talking Nets basketball. I'm sure we'll do more of it in the future.
Okay, guys, you could check us out at NetFans You Know on Twitter, YouTube, The Only NetFans You Know on Instagram. Have a good day. Have a great night. If you're listening to this during your commute, have a great day at work. Safe. And we'll see you next time. We're out.
Brooklyn is another obvious one because Mikhail Bridges is my dog, too.